It took me a while to control it.
You have precision control now, he remarks.
If only he saw me a few days back, when my fire was scurrying away from me. Imran runs his hands across my palms, touching the grooves. How much will this calf command? Still, he says, and his voice trails off. It's unclear what his silence means. That he doesn't believe me? Or that I'm not good enough? Didn't he see what I did tonight? Isn't that more than enough? His eyes shift to my father.
How did she play with fire when she was younger?
Lighting matches, playing with burners. I couldn't keep her away from it. Starting little fires in the backyard. Setting bottles on fire. Firecrackers, too. He lies with such abandon it makes me want to cry. And I rarely cry. I hate crying. I hate weakness. I hate that he makes me weak. Imran considers the answer, as if he's measuring whether there's any truth to it.
Perhaps that is good. We want all our players to have passion.
Then he turns back to me.
Passion is one of the 5 tools of the best elemental artists in the world. Do you know the others?
The 5 tools have been drilled into me since I could walk, since I could breathe. Xavier had 4 of them. I have all of them, most of the time. Beauty, power, passion, presence, and control.
Yes, you have all of them. You are a 5-tool artist. You are rare.
I have goosebumps for a moment, and it feels good to be praised by this man. But more than good, it feels like hope. Like a map with a treasure in the middle, and I can find it and never let go of the gem. A gem that I've earned. Because even though my fire was born of a lie and bred from a crime, fire has become who I am now. My fire feels real, as true and native as if I'd been born with it, because it's necessary. Because fire saved me. And fire will save the rest of my family.
If you were to join the circuit, you would need a stage name. Have you thought about one?
I have thought about stage names before. Entertained them, considered them. Names like Nitro or Flamethrower are passé, not to mention taken by other artists in the leagues. But I know my stage name, because I know who I am. The girl Prometheus. Now he raises both eyebrows, and his face splits into a full-on grin. Nava laughs lightly, nodding, though she has no idea why the name is so fitting. She likes it because it's bold, because I'm the performer she could never be, fearless in her eyes. No one thinks it's the truth. Why would they? Everything about me is a lie. Except my new name.
The girl Prometheus,
Imran repeats.
A fire stealer. It is a perfect stage name,
he says, and extends his hand. I try to suppress a smile because I've been taught to keep it cool, to be stoic, to stomach all my emotions. But I'm grinning. I'm bursting. This is everything I've ever wanted.
We'll start you in Miami next week. Welcome to the ME Leagues, the girl Prometheus.
Chapter 10. A Wish for Peace. My dad has finished drawing a bath for my mother, and I'm getting ready for lunch with Imran and my father to review the details of my contract with the Leagues.
Wear the pink dress with the scalloped neckline. My mother whispers before she closes the bathroom door and locks herself into her potpourri of lavender and steam. The one I got you for your birthday.
I head into my room and stare at the open closet. I'm not wearing the pink dress. It's babyish and has a lacy hemline. I've never worn anything remotely like it.
Isn't it just so feminine and delicate? It'll look beautiful on you,
my mom said when I feigned liking it. Feminine and delicate? That might have been the first time anyone had used those words to describe me. I am motorcycle leather. I am ripped jeans. I am white and black tank tops. I am boots and sunglasses, flip-flops and cutoffs. The dress is still on the hanger in my closet. Jana's on her bed, reading one of my magazines. I yank on the pink frock. I glance at myself in the mirror. I look like a doll.
This dress is hideous, I whisper to Jana.
She nods her assent. It's totally disgusting. I tug it off and pull on a denim skirt and a black t-shirt, then sink down on the bed next to my sister.
Oh, Jana, what am I gonna do? Take me with you.
I pull back to look at her. Really? You want to get away from here?
Yeah, who doesn't?
What happened at the pool yesterday? She gives me a curious look, like my question doesn't compute.
Did Dad try to...
But my voice trails off, because I'm not even sure what to say or ask. Did he make you stay under the water or something? She shrugs.
He just timed me, to see how long I could hold my breath.
How long can you hold your breath?
A long time, she says with a slight smile. Do you think I'll be a water artist?
Jana, you are going to be anything you want to be. I give her a kiss on the forehead. I promise. I step back into the hall and head out with my father. We drive to the only fancy restaurant around, a steak and lobster joint one town over. It's a darkened place with burgundy booths and chocolate brown carpets and the air of money. Thick, heavy menus, waiters and waitresses with white dress shirts and black ties, linen napkins.
Shrimp cocktail?
Imran suggests after we sit down. My father nods and I follow suit. Imran calls the waiter over and orders. I like the sound of his voice. The smooth caress of words like another and shrimp and please flowing from his tongue like warm honey, thanks to his accent. He's older than I am by a few years. He has high cheekbones and lush black hair. Something about him reminds me of my beautiful boy. Maybe it's the hair or the cut of his jaw. Or maybe it's that he seems kind, as I imagine my beautiful boy to be. The shrimp arrives, and it's delicious. We never eat like this at home. At our house, it's rice and beans and pasta Jana makes, because my dad decided cooking meals is her task. As the youngest and the only one without a job, she must have dinner on the table when my father returns home, smelly and greasy, from the junkyard. He orders a steak. And I opt for a garden salad, even though I really want the roast chicken and mashed potatoes. But I have a feeling Imran wants to know I have control over what goes in my body, that I will stay trim and tight. Imran asks for water for all of us, then hands the menus to the waiter. His brown eyes land on me. He clasps his hands together.
Arya, have you ever been to the Emmy?
No, sir, I say. I haven't been anywhere. I haven't been on a plane. I've never left Florida. A light laugh, then he tells me I can call him Imran.
Yes, sir.
He shakes his head, bemused.
It is the most beautiful land in all the world,
he begins, telling me of the mosques and temples, of the desertscapes and the mountains, and most of all, how the towns and cities there have all changed. The Emmy used to be a land of disparate countries, torn apart by wars with the United States, with Israel, with each other. There once was a time when you could say wryly, "What do you pray for?" And people would answer, "For peace in the Middle East." Unrest could be traced back thousands upon thousands of years. This was biblical territory, after all. But after multiple oil crises and myriad occupations, a miraculous thing happened. The fighting stopped. The wars ended. Not overnight, not with a snap of the fingers. But over several years, it was as if all the bad will there had unwound, drained itself out, and been replaced by peace and prosperity for all. A treaty was signed, a manifesto of goodwill. It's long been rumored that this harvest of peace came about through the region's current leaders, that deals were made with grantors, that wishes poured forth like wine. Of course, the ME is home to the very first legends of grantors. Long ago they were called genies or jinni, and were said to be kept in bottles or lamps or rings. Once upon a time, storytellers spun tales of magic woven by genies across 1,000 Arabian nights. The genies in those tales never granted peace, though. They never granted anything but the most personal wishes of those asking. Money, knowledge, power. I don't know that grantors could bring peace to a land, but maybe there's some special clause for wishing for something altruistic. Wishing for the thing all your citizens have wanted for years. Or maybe the stakes were simply higher than usual. Every wish comes with a price. Pay now, or pay later. I wonder if the ME is rife with grantors. If you find them in caves laid with riches, caverns encrusted with rubies and emeralds and golden goblets, or inside dusty tarnished lamps in the marketplace, tucked into carts, next to baskets of dates and figs. But then again, grantors aren't really found in lamps or bottles. Xavier once told me they're found behind doors and hidden in tunnels. I suppose they could be anywhere. But whether through grantors or good fortune, the ME is now a land where freedom of all kinds are embraced and wealth has spread out to nearly all citizens. The ME also operates the most talented elemental arts teams around the world, including in the United States. The ME leagues here in the United States have the best stadiums, the most devoted fans, the highest payrolls, with teams in Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, all part of the system, and the recruited artists start their training in Miami.
"I am lucky to call it home,"
Imran continues.
"There is no better place in all the world to live, to be young, to perform than the ME, especially since the treaty."
"Well, yeah, it's the top of everything," I say, because every elemental artist who performs dreams of being called up to the ME leagues.
"That is also why it's so important that the leagues be pure,"
Imran says. I freeze. This is the moment when I've been found out. Someone saw us, Elise and me, on the beach a few days ago. Or someone's been watching us for years. Maybe some other elemental artist, waiting for his or her big break, needing to snatch mine away from me, figuring it's unearned, figuring I'm a fraud. Which I am.
"We have the strictest rules of any of the leagues, and we're tightening them even more,"
Imran continues. I gird myself to show nothing, to register no reaction to what he's saying. I don't want him to read me, to be able to tell I'm a thief. But inside, I'm twisted and turned, and terrified of what my father will do to me if he knows I've stolen fire. I begin plotting an escape route, first from the restaurant, then from this town. I'll spend my life on the lam. I'll be a runaway. Xavier would help me, shuttle me from safe town to safe town, protecting me, protecting Elise.
"You see," Imran continues, "there have been accusations of grantor use."
"Grantor use?"
my father asks, and there's the strangest sound in his voice. It's higher and it wavers for a moment. Imran nods.
We've been looking into it and have found no evidence in any of our teams, but we have to maintain the highest standards of purity. We have to make sure our talent does not use granters.
In what way?
My father asks.
In any way, but especially not to enhance their powers. To wish for more powers. To buy their powers in the first place.
I breathe again. I'm safe. Has that happened?
The possibility always exists. And so we are implementing new safeguards to ensure all elemental artists are clean.
Imran continues.
How can you do that?
My father asks, and that same note of worry repeats in his voice. I sneak a look at my father, his jaw tense. Why is he so worried about granters? Granter use can't be monitored.
We have ways,
Imran says, giving my father the barest courtesy of an answer, then moving on.
And of course, we will expect Arya to uphold our fine standards for purity. I trust you will,
he says to me. Yes, sir.
Good. I have so much faith in you,
Imran says to me.
In fact, I spoke to my superiors last night. I told them what I had seen in you. I told them of your great potential. I showed the videos I made of the show. They were particularly impressed with your fire twin, as you can imagine,
he says to me, capping the sentence with a flourish at twin.
It's the sort of spectacle that can bring down the house, that audiences will talk about for weeks. Can your twin do more than bow? Can it last longer than a few seconds?
I'm not sure, I say quietly. I just started working on it. Imran doesn't blink. He doesn't flinch. His confidence is electric.
We will train that talent then,
he adds. Though I wonder if the leagues can train that talent, if they even know how.
We have the best talent and we have the best trainers. And so we want to move you up quickly. We have tutors and schooling on site, so you can finish your senior year of high school while training and performing. Should you choose to accept our offer, and we very much hope you will, we have decided we are going to skip Miami and send you straight to New York next week.
All my borrowed time drains in a second, in the shimmery outline of my replica. Chapter 11. Last Night. I study the number of days in between my renewals, but the numbers don't add up. There's no obvious pattern, no way to predict when my fire will wane. I crouch by my bed in the late afternoon and stare at the numbers again on my sheet of paper, wishing they'd reveal a secret. Tell me the only number I need to know. When I'll start to fade. But even if I know when I'll ebb, how are Elise and I going to engineer a rendezvous for a lightning strike? Miami would have worked, since she'll be in college nearby. But now I'm going more than 1,000 miles away, and we can't drive an hour and meet in the middle. Will I have to secretly jet back to Florida? Will she fly to New York? I can't picture us chasing lightning in Central Park for all the millions in Manhattan to see. Call me crazy. A horrid thought lands in my head. What if Elise dies? Oh God, I can't even go there for so many reasons. An idea flashes before me. What if we reignite my fire well before it runs out? What if we got on a schedule? I study the numbers once more, then the training schedule Imran gave me. In 60 days, I'll have my first break from training. That's late August, right before Elise goes to school. We'll meet up then. I have to be highly strategic now about everything. I'll schedule renewals with Elise, and I'll make sure my brother keeps a close watch on Janna. I hate leaving her, but it's the only way I can help her in the long run. I text him, telling him I have to see him even though he's working an all-day shift. I leave the house, hopping on my bike to head to the burger stand by the beach where he works. The sun bakes me as I ride, turning my already tanned skin even darker. My tank is drenched with sweat when I reach the bike rack and lock up my wheels. I walk to the screen door. French fries snap in hot oil. Xavier gives the metal basket a quick shake, then dumps the sizzling and greasy fries on a metal tray to cool them off.
"Be right back," he tells his coworker.
He steps into the alley behind the shack. We're next to a dumpster. It smells like all the fried food in the world, and like the sea, too.
"What's up? You okay?"
"Xavi, when I'm gone, I need you to do something, okay?"
"Name it."
"I need you to look out for Jana. I need you to keep her safe. Keep her away from Dad. Don't let him hurt her."
"How would he hurt her?"
I never told Xavi what our father did to me. I trust my brother with my life, but I'm terrified of what he'd do to our dad if he knew about the nights in the garage. Xavier is locked and loaded. He'd fire without a warning shot, and he'd burn my father alive. If Xavi did that, my brother would be locked up forever. I can't condemn my brother by laying at his feet a temptation that he could not resist. So I don't reveal. I tease it out. I worry that he'll think she's ice and he'll do anything to bring it out of her, okay? I press a palm against his chest, flattening my hand against my brother's flimsy t-shirt so the scars can be felt through the fabric. Like everyone else, he thinks they are fire art scars. "You have to protect Jana. Promise me, promise me, promise me." I repeat the plea until my voice hitches. But he's already said yes. He says it again.
"I promise,"
he says, and I have to believe him, even as the guilt over leaving Jana gnaws at me. I hold on to that guilt as I unlock my bike. I can never let go of my self-loathing, to the possibility of my father taking Jana to the ocean, of him pushing her head underwater, and my not being there to prevent it. I think of him dipping her hands in buckets of ice. I don't stop the reel in my mind as I ride to the empty practice field, head out to the bullpen, and let flames fly from my hands to form my mirror image. I raise my hands high in the air. She follows suit. I bend down to the ground. She does the same. I look at my fiery copy, then stalk toward it. She stalks back, marching right up to me. I freeze. What would happen if I kept walking through my twin? Would her fire hurt me? I snap my fingers, like I did earlier. She's gone. I should be happy that I did it again. Instead, I am exhausted and entirely twisted up inside. The Mud Dog shortstop finds me as I walk through the echoey concrete hallway after my last practice before I leave.
"Here you're getting out of town," he says.
Though I've admired his body, the muscles of his arms, and the trimness of his waist from afar, this is the first time we've spoken. I'm not even sure of his name. Jake, maybe? John? Yeah. He stops walking, and I do the same out of courtesy. He shakes his head.
"Do you have any idea how..."
But then his voice trails off. "How lucky you are? How much I want a ticket to the show, too?" Pick any option to end the sentence, and they all add up to envy. I have what they all want, and yet I can't help but think I will spend the rest of my life holding my breath, waiting for the moment, the phone call, the summons, the knock on the door, that I've been caught. "Yeah, I do," I say and nod. "I hear you're a great shortstop," I add, even though I've heard nothing of the sort. "But this fabrication can't hurt."
here?
He raises an eyebrow, and the corner of his lips quirk up in that tiny smile I've seen now and then. Suddenly, my opinion matters. Suddenly, what I've heard means something. Totally. He holds out his hand, fingers curled in tightly, so we can bump fists. I oblige.
Hey, can I have some of your luck?
What do you mean? I ask cautiously.
Let me rub your head or your hands or something. You're legend now. Not just because you're leaving, but because of that trick.
I don't know what to say about that, so I lean toward the superstitious ball player, tipping my forehead. He places his palm against my hair and rubs. It feels nice, like I'm a cat and he's stroking my fur.
Good luck, Fire Girl,
he says, and walks away. Hey! I call out before he reaches the door. I never go for it with guys. But I won't see him again. There's a group of us getting together before I go. Let me know if you want to join us.
That'd be awesome.
I hand him my cell phone so he can enter his number. He keys it in, then hands back the phone.
It's under shortstop, just in case you forget my name.
I never remembered it in the first place. Elise and I do donuts in her brown hatchback on my last night in Wonder. We turn in tight circles, easily outpacing Kyle in his truck. The tires squeal as Elise takes the car on yet another orbit around the empty mall parking lot. The black asphalt is all ours tonight. Just Elise and Kyle, and the mall security guard who knows Kyle, and so won't say a word about the kids blasting tunes and burning rubber at the back of a mall that's got nearly as many stores going out of business as staying in business. Elise hollers loudly as we make our final circle, then slams on the brakes. I bounce forward a bit, but my seatbelt keeps me in place. She turns off the ignition and looks at me. A half-sad, half-happy, all-wistful look. Kyle stopped his truck, too, and has the door open. But he's a gentleman when he sees ladies talking. He knows not to interrupt. I'll see you in August. It'll be fine. Right, I say, nodding. August. We'll do it in August. Elise reaches her hand to my hair, petting me. Don't worry, babe. It's an unbreakable date. I nod and give her a hug, hoping against hope that I've got enough battery life in me to last till then. I'll miss you, I say. And not just because of the... you know. I know, Elise says. You'll miss our donuts most, right? I tease. And the soda and chips and pretzels, too. I pat my belly.
I'm going to be on one of those Hollywood lettuce-only diets now. I'm sure they watch every calorie that goes into your body.
I bet they have calorie monitors implanted under your skin.
Barbara, we have a code 9 on the girl from Wonder. She just consumed a Snickers.
Elise laughs and elbows me.
Dummy, you're going to break your lettuce-only diet for a Snickers? Get something good, like an ice cream sundae.
I salute her. Now, this is the real reason I'll miss you. That kind of sage advice. You know it. Then we open our car doors, and Kyle is waiting for his girl. He wraps her in his arms and lays a kiss on her right in front of me, like he always has, like he always will. She's lucky. She can go to college. She can control her future. She can be near Kyle, since he's stationed here. Kyle, I say, turning to him. His sister Mindy is Jana's best friend. Look out for my sister, okay?
Sure, of course,
he says, his innate sense of duty kicking in, even though he doesn't know details. Let me know if she seems, I don't know, strange, or stranger than usual. Elise steps in,
We will. Promise.
I see a pair of headlights coming toward me. The car they belong to pulls into the next parking spot, and the driver cuts the engine. Shortstop joins us, and the four of us sit on the hood of Elise's hatchback, drinking sodas and eating chips and chatting about Wonder and baseball and fire and that epic twin I made. Then Elise and Kyle make themselves scarce, and Shortstop sits on the curb with me.
Thanks for inviting me,
he says. No problem. I figured you needed a good head rub. I offer myself again. He smiles and takes me up on it, rubbing my hair with the palm of his hand. Then the rubbing becomes less playful, more flirty.
I'm glad you texted me,
he says in a low voice. I don't say me too. I don't say I'm glad he showed up. I don't say anything, because there is nothing to say. Instead, I grab the neck of his t-shirt and pull him against me, fumbling toward closeness, lurching into a connection. I wrap my arms around his back and kiss him hard and hungry. He responds instantly, a bruising and frenzied kiss, even though I don't know his name and probably never will. And maybe, because of that, because this is my last night in my hometown, because I am a fraud and a fake and I haven't any real luck to pass on, or maybe just because I'm tired of being the only one without someone, I pretend. I pretend he's the boyfriend I've never had, the love I'm leaving behind. And with that, I imagine I'm telling him with my lips that crush against his, that I've longed to escape into him. I try to tell him with my hands tangled up in his hair that every day I'm afraid, and that's the reason I can't love him. Because I don't know how to love. I try to tell him with the way I press my body against his that I can't fall in love, that I'm defective, and my heart is scarred and ugly, and it's better off like this. They're all better off without me. Later that night, I take Jana pool hopping. Last time? Jana whispers, tapping my arm. We tiptoe across the crunchy grass in the yard. It'll be the best time, I tell her. The Markins live several blocks away on a much nicer street, but their fence is easily scalable, and we're already over it. I open the screen door that lets us into their pool area, screened in as nearly all Florida pools are, unlocked as theirs often is. I pull off my t-shirt and shorts, stripping down to a bathing suit, and Jana does the same. Now what did I teach you? I ask. Silence is golden when you're pool hopping, she says with a sly smile. Then she dives in and swims the length to the shallow end. I meet her there, walking down the steps into the pool. Not very quiet. She raises her eyebrows and shrugs playfully. What can I say? The water brings it out in me. You're trouble, I say. Then I splash her. Hey, who's being noisy now? She splashes back. The whole neighborhood can hear us now. You know what that means? It means I need to dunk you, she says, and then drops a palm on the top of my head and pushes me under. I pop back up a few feet away. She's smiling, droplets glistening on her face. She is in her element, playing in the water. Race me, I say, and we take off underwater, dolphin-like bullets shooting along the length of the pool. It is no contest. She reaches the deep end well before me. Ty, I declare when I rise up.
You wish.
Do over? I'll even give you a 3-stroke head start, she says, and I love how much fun she has in the water. Deal, I say, taking off. But once more, as I expected, as I wanted, she beats me. I'm going to miss this, I tell her, shrugging off the teasing and the joking. Me too. I want the water to always be fun for you.
Yeah, same here.
I'll be back soon, I promise.
You know that, right?
I do know that.
I'll be waiting.
We swim more, and Jana shows me her forward somersaults and how she can swim along the bottom and do handstands, too. And then, in the middle of the night, we finally get out of the water. The next day, I leave Florida. Chapter 12, New York Minute. Some guy in front of me wears basketball shorts, black high tops, and a t-shirt the size of a tent. It billows when a truck screeches by. The guy talks loudly into his phone. Everyone talks loudly into their phones. He stops at 11th Avenue, glances down the street, tosses his fast food bag on the sidewalk, and walks across, no, struts, hitting the other side just as the traffic comes rocketing down. I pick up the greasy white bag, crumple it up, and wing it on top of an overflowing garbage can on the corner, because litter sucks. I cross another block and head to Chelsea Piers, which used to be some sort of sports recreation center, with bowling and golf and even an ice rink a few years back. But now it's been bought by the leagues to train all its New York performers. My first show is in 3 weeks, and I'm not even remotely ready. I've been the worst kind of awful since I arrived, like I'm an awkward, gangly freshman in a school full of cool kids. Some of them aren't too fond of me either, including Mariska. She's the first in her family to make it to the leagues, and she followed all the rules and worked her way up. I thought we'd be friends, or at least cordial teammates. But instead, I'm the girl who got a free pass out of training camp thanks to a twin I can't replicate properly, and so no one likes me much, and I texted Elise last night to tell her. I text her again. I still suck. She writes back.
No, you don't. Keep practicing. You can do it.
I'm a block away from Chelsea Piers when I see him. For the first time. The beautiful boy from the photos. My heart stops, and some primal instinct tells me to run so he never knows I've admired his face. But I don't run. I stare at Mariska's boy, the one she poses with, arm draped over his shoulder like she owns him. He's flesh and body now, walking toward me, and he's more beautiful in person, even from a distance. Mariska's with him, and she keeps reaching for his hand. He keeps taking his hand away. Why won't her boyfriend let her hold his hand? I duck into the doorway of a hardware store that makes keys. I flatten myself against the concrete wall, but then lean out so I can see them. Strange. She's turned the other way, heading back to Chelsea Piers, and he's no longer with her. But as I scan the block, I see an arm beneath a sidewalk grate, pulling the grate back in place. On that arm is a dark blue shirt. Then the grate is in place, and the boy is underneath the sidewalk? I shake my head as if I'm seeing things. Maybe this is what happens when you make fire twins. Madness. I start walking again, but slow down as I reach the grate he disappeared into. I peer through the slats, looking for a well-dressed boy. I see nothing but darkness, and when I crouch down and try to listen, all I hear is a hollow sound. I leave and tell myself he must have stepped into a nearby store or coffee shop. When I yank open the heavy blue doors to Chelsea Piers, I head straight for the locker room, where I drop my bag inside my locker. You better start showing up early. I turn my head to Mariska.
Yeah.
She nods, stares intensely at me with her dark eyes. You need to work harder here. They expect you to pull off those tricks, she says. But her words don't feel like friendly encouragement. More like admonishment. Okay, I say, because I don't know if she's giving me useful advice or not. A black-haired girl shakes her head at me. Claudia. She's a water artist, and Mariska's best friend. Everyone wants to see your twin, Claudia adds. Did you leave it back home in Florida? I look away, a red tint creeping into my cheeks. Well? I'm working on it, I mutter. Mariska stomps over to me, parks her hands on her hips. Work harder, she says, spitting out the last word. That's how we're all here, because we work our butts off. She tries to poke me in the chest, but I pivot away. She yanks her hand back before she can touch me. You do the same. Got it. Message received. Or don't, Mariska adds, shifting to an offhand tone. Because I can handle the big tricks without your help. I don't fashion a comeback or a sharp retort, because my mouth is dry and I feel so incredibly stupid. I would mock me too, because my twin is nowhere to be seen. During every practice, I've been asked to show my special ability. I've tried to picture my dad. I've tried to draw on all those vast reserves of rage inside me. But the distance must be muting my anger and my talent. Because I've managed no carbon copy. All I've produced is an arm here, a leg there, half a face, sometimes a shadowy shimmer of a body that lasts for 2 seconds. I leave the locker room and head out to the fields for fire practice. The fire coach is a guy named Mateus. He shakes his head at me when I make a smoky shadow. I can't get this right. I can't even get close to this trick here in New York. Maybe it was just a Florida thing. I spend the afternoon working on other skills, practicing the timing of our team routines that I'm just learning, the nuances of the fire sprays, the circle of flames, the way we're expected to make them skitter through the night sky with our wires. Mariska watches me the whole time, a smug, satisfied look on her face. I feel so dumb with her eyes on me, like I don't know where my feet are or how to work my hands. I call Xavi later that week from my dorm room, launching straight into the most important part. How's Jana? She's fan-flipping-tastic, he says. I furrow my brow, though he can't see me. Xavi rarely talks in such exuberant terms. How so? Just swimming a ton, hanging with Mindy, having fun like a kid should do. Don't worry about her, R, I promise. I am being the best big brother. Something in his over-the-top manner worries me, as if he's covering up. Are you sure? Is Dad doing anything to her? Nope, I swear. I have no choice but to believe him. Are you making fire? I ask. I am just fine. Don't worry. Focus on the leagues. We are all good. We chat for a while longer and then say goodbye. I end the call and dial Elise next. Do you miss me? She says the second she answers. Like you can't even imagine. So what's it like? I can't believe you say you suck. It's like heaven and hell at the same time, I say. Then tell her about Mariska and my lack of a fire twin. I've been trying so hard, but I can't do it. Do you think the weather there is different or something, and maybe it affects what you make? I stretch out on my single bed. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I have to be angrier. Maybe I'm only angry when I'm near my dad, I say with a dry laugh. I'll send you pictures of him if you need incentive, she offers. Huh, no thanks. So we're still getting together in August? I told you, it's unbreakable. There's nothing that can stand in the way of that happening. I exhale, my shoulders falling, and I realize I've been holding my breath since I left Florida. Of course, I'll probably be holding my breath again until the next renewal. I suppose I am always holding my breath.
What about boys? Any cute ones?
There's one, I say, but then I trail off. Because I haven't even talked to Mariska's boyfriend. I don't even know his name. On top of that, he's taken.
But he's not an option, I quickly add.
Well, find someone who is an option. Her directive reverberates in my brain later that night as I walk to the common room in the dorm to find some cereal. Music plays from the kitchen and a faint light is on. I walk inside and see Mariska, Claudia, one of the water boys, and then him. I stop in the doorway, and it's as if my feet can no longer move. Mariska is painting Claudia's nails, the water boy is flicking through channels on a TV, and the beautiful boy is reading. He's not even next to Mariska, who's stretched out on the couch with Claudia. He's sitting in an armchair, reading a paperback. Mariska looks up at me, arching an eyebrow.
Are you coming to join our party? Solo tonight again?
It's clear that I'm not welcome. That until I pull my own weight on the team, she'll continue to be cold. Just wanted to get some cereal, I say coolly, and I unroot myself from the doorway and head to the cupboard. It's always a party in the New York leagues, Claudia says with a snort. The more the merrier, you know. You could bring two next time. I remain impassive. I don't want them to know how much my failure embarrasses me.
Watch it, Claude, or your nails are going to smear, Mariska says to her friend, and their interest, or disinterest, in me is done.
As I find the cereal box, the boy looks up from the book, meeting my eyes. I've never been this close to him. I've only seen him on my phone, in pictures, and at the end of the block. Now he's mere feet from me, and I'm glad the lights are low because my face is flushed as I take him in. He's more beautiful than in the pictures Mariska posted. His eyes are the purest brown, as if they've been flooded with the richest, deepest color that money could buy. But there's something more to his eyes than the color. They look as if they've not only seen the world, but also known it. I feel unsteady because I'm not used to such beautiful boys looking at me. Beautiful boys who belong to other girls. I have to find the strength to look away, but whatever discipline I might possess in this regard has seeped away.
Hi,
he says to me, but I can't read him. I can't tell if he's friendly or bored.
This is Taj, Mariska says over her shoulder. He's with me.
Indeed I am,
he says, flashing me a close-mouthed grin. Mariska looks up from Claudia's hand. But I don't know that I need you anymore. He springs up from the chair.
So then I can go?
I have the feeling I'm about to witness a public breakup, so I take my bowl of cereal, say goodbye, and hightail it out of there. Seconds later, I hear Mariska say, I'm done. And then Taj is in the hallway, his book tucked under his arm, walking quickly in my direction. He slows when he sees me.
Hello again.
I tell myself I just met him for the first time, that I haven't been checking him out from afar. Hi, how's your book?
It is excellent, and I'm going to do everything I can to finish it in the next 10 minutes,
he says, and he seems buoyant with his plan to read.
Why, do you turn into a pumpkin in the next 10 minutes?
The corners of his lips curl up.
Perhaps I do.
What's the book? I'm surprised that I'm talking to him, but then talking has never been my problem. Letting someone in is.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, he says, showing me the book. Highly recommended.
I needed a laugh.
Then he tips his forehead to the common room.
I wonder why, I say, and that earns me another smile.
My God, he has beautiful teeth, too. Straight and white. And it's scary how everything about him is perfectly put together. His lips look so soft, and for a moment I find myself wondering what it would be like to kiss him.
Yes, it's a mystery, isn't it?
He says, a playful glint in those deep brown eyes. And suddenly we're in on it together. The Mariska joke.
So I guess it's over with you guys?
Honestly, it never even started, he says. But there's nothing crass or cruel in his tone.
Oh.
I'm not sure what to say next. I want to tell him I saw his picture online. But even though I don't have a ton of experience with boys, I know not to say that.
Then he exhales heavily.
Sadly, I must go.
It was nice meeting you, Taj.
It was nice meeting you too,
he says, then waits expectantly for my name.
Aria.
He offers a hand to shake, and I gladly take it. Then, as his fingers wrap around mine, I remember the thing I should never forget. My scars. I press my teeth against my lips, embarrassed that he's touched my hands. But his are warm, and there's something electric in his touch, the start of a spark in my belly. As he walks away, down the hall, down the stairwell, and out into the night, I find myself missing him.
Chapter 13. Shiny Things. The next few weeks pass in an exhausted blur, full of all-day practices that tire out every particle of my body. When practice ends, I drag myself to the nearby dorm the leagues use, grab something to eat, call my brother, talk to my sister, and crash. I see my teammates many hours every day, but we are hardly teammates at all. We are competitors vying for the same spot, the next thing, the next rung on the ladder up, up, up. But I'm still the flailing rookie, the kid they called up too soon. One afternoon in the locker room, as I'm zipping up my worn-down black combat boots, I wear them even when it's hot out because flip-flops in New York City are an invitation for crushed toes, and because boots make me feel safe, one of the Earth artists speaks to me. I brace myself, prepared for more thinly veiled barbs or aloofness. Gemma is a chorus Earth artist, like the backup dancers to a pop star, an understudy to Mariska. Gemma, along with a waif-like beanpole of a boy named Cameron, crafts mini fault lines and creates tiny flowers to pair up with the bigger quakes and the oak trees that Mariska draws from the ground, like a magician making things appear, then disappear. Our creations are fleeting.
Hey, she says.
Hey.
I hear you're from Florida.
Yeah, I'm from Florida.
I answer cautiously, not sure where she's going, uncertain if we're making conversation or if I'm being set up.
Me too.
Oh yeah?
She nods.
This tiny little town in the panhandle no one has ever heard of.
She tells me the name of the town, and she's right. I haven't heard of it. I adjust my denim miniskirt and pull my gray tank over the belt buckle of my skirt.
How psyched were you to get out of Florida? It's the most backward place.
Totally, I say. I'm not sure how I'd even begin to answer how half of me is happy to be away from home, but the other half is shredded with guilt over leaving my sister. A guilt that's only been eased somewhat by Xavi's updates. Jana's doing fine, he claims.
Florida is too hot, too full of old people, and too full of scam artists.
Gemma runs a hand through her black hair. It's shoulder length, straight, and the color of midnight. My mom always said that,
The part about scam artists, I add. She ran into them when she was on the party circuit years ago. She's a water artist. Well, used to be.
You know, I think it's cool that you skipped Miami. I've seen your moves. You're good. Really good.
Thank you, I say. She sounds genuine, and it's a sound I could get used to. So are you. Gemma waves a hand in the air. She wears several rings, big sparkly ones in various colors, blues, maroons, reds. Costume jewelry that she clearly doesn't wear when she's practicing or performing. I was in Miami for a few months before I came here, but even then I was counting down the days till I could leave. Gemma says as she places a foot on the bench, then bends over to tighten the laces on her sneakers. She wears deep pink sparkly sneakers. She's an explosion of color, the color copy of my black and white photo.
Cool shoes, I say. They remind me of Elise.
Thanks, yours too. She tips her forehead to my boots, my armor, my shield. Then she extends a hand. I'm Gemma, but my friends all call me Gem. I already know her name, but I like her friendliness. She waggles her fingers. Since, well, I like sparkly things, maybe they should call me Squirrel. I laugh out loud at that.
Hey, want to get an iced coffee? She asks.
Sure. Then I add, Squirrel. And now it's her turn to laugh. We're about to leave when the head coach barks at us.
Team meeting, now. Back on the field, but don't suit up. Head of scouting and artist development is here.
I glance at Jem, and she shrugs. I walk outside with her to the field into the heat of the late afternoon. Imran stands next to a short, curvy girl who's probably about our age. The girl wears black slacks and a crisp white blouse.
As you all know, grantor testing is going to start,
Imran says in his soothing voice.
I've talked with many of you privately, so this should come as no surprise. But just to reiterate, this is the first year we'll be undertaking this process, and we are going to expect you all to check out. This is Reyna. She'll help facilitate the testing.
Reyna gives a quick nod but says nothing. Her hair is dark and thick, with the kind of loose, effortless curls that everyone wants but no one gets without a salon. She can't be any older than 16. She looks as if she never laughs.
All the teams are going through testing, and I expect all the teams to be clean, especially the New York team. The others look to New York to set the standard, so you need to do just that. As you know, if anyone is found to be using, you'll be banned from the leagues forever and ever and then some.
Imran pauses and flashes his reassuring smile. I don't think the man has ever raised his voice. I don't think he has to. Even when he issues orders, he sounds like he's giving praise.
So, do as Reyna says.
Another crisp nod from Reyna, and then we're dismissed for good this time. As Jem and I make our way out of Chelsea Piers, I ask her what she thinks Reyna will be doing.
Nothing,
Jem says with a scoff.
Why do you say that?
Because how could they possibly know?
I don't know. How could they? They can't. That's the point. You can't test for grantor use. It's not like getting a wish leaves some sort of mark. It's not like there are trace amounts of leftover wish dust in your pee.
So you think it's all a ruse?
She nods her head.
Totally. But Imran made such a big deal about it when he recruited me. Why would he do that?
They don't want us using grantors, but they can't stop someone from using a grantor. Besides, everyone in Miami was talking about grantors all the time, and how you find one. It's virtually impossible, she says as we walk to the coffee shop.
How is it impossible? What do they say?
That's all I know. But it's not like finding a genie in a bottle. Everyone says it's more...
Her voice trails off.
More what? Complicated?
Not complicated in the sense of a scavenger hunt or riddle complicated, but more like you have to be ready for it. she says as we reach the coffee shop and order our iced coffees. I say, because there's not much else to say. Imran made it clear I needed to be clean, and so I will be clean. Besides, Elise is my grantor for all intents and purposes. As long as she's in my life, I'd never need a grantor. After coffee, Jem takes me to her favorite shop in the East Village for rings. The store's exterior is black, and the windows are full of leather bracelets and silver necklaces, as well as tattoo designs. When I get out of the leagues, I'm going to come back here and get a tattoo, Jem says, pointing toward the back of the shop where a bleached blonde with a nose ring is sitting stoically.